Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Good morning. Welcome to the Most High Show. My name is Jamie. I'm your host today. I'm going to be speaking to Gentry Jones in Washington. Hey, Gentry.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm good.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear your story. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
So my twins, I am an accountant, and I have two twins that are, I guess, seven twins that are two and a half.
Okay, and what part of Washington do you live in?
So I live in Yakima Valley, which is like central
part
of Washington, so we are
kind of
in the middle of the desert, and
kind of
wine country, and
farming,
so it's a lot hotter
in Washington
than people think,
because
Seattle always gives it a better rap.
Okay.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story of recovery today, so let's get started.
Okay.
Did you start from kind of the beginning?
Yeah, so tell me about how old were you when you started drinking?
Oh, I was in middle school. Sorry, Mom. but I had drinks a little bit in middle school. Really started kind of into high school, though. I was always really busy in sports and activities and got into a little bit more of the party scene. Into high school. I think that it got worse when I went to college, definitely, because where I grew up was a really small community, and I was an athlete, and it was kind of like a big fish in a small pond, and I went to college, and I wasn't like a big deal anymore. And I think that even when I look back now, and I look at my like childhood, I always had problems drinking, because like my drinking problem is a thinking problem, and I think that I always had a thinking problem where I always felt like I didn't belong, that I didn't fit in, and alcohol and drugs, they didn't necessarily like help me fit in, but they kind of silenced that doubt that I didn't belong, or silenced that fear that I didn't belong. So when I get to college, and I just feel like nobody knows me, and I have to make new friends, and it's a whole new experience, it was really easy to drink so that I didn't have to feel that doubt and insecurities and fear of not fitting in. And it got worse throughout college. I bounced around to different colleges. I ended up in Seattle, rainy city. And I had a boyfriend there who told me I had a problem. And wanting to be liked, wanting to be lovable, I was agreed. Yeah, you're right. I do. So I ended up going to treatment. I mean, I did have a problem. I admitted I had a problem. I don't think I was ready to address it at that time. But I ended up going to treatment at 21 and got sober. Okay. But a few months after that, I ended up getting pregnant with my first son. So moved back home, had my son, and reconnected with my high school sweetheart, and then kind of the drinking kind of started back up again.
Okay. So at that point, when you were 21 and you went to treatment, and you said that you were clean, how long were you clean at that point?
Well, 4 months before I got pregnant and then through the pregnancy. So I probably was a little over a year before I drank again.
Okay. And then you went back home and you said you reconnected with your high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But now I had a kid. So it was kind of like, well, I'm not going to get crazy anymore. I'm not a college student. You know, I'm not, it's not going to get that bad again. And so I thought I was kind of safe, and it didn't get that bad. I managed it. I don't think I ever had it under control. I mean, I still embarrass myself all the time. I still drink too much when I drink. Like, I didn't have an off switch. Like, once I started, I was going for it. And then had my second son. We got married, had my second son. And after I was done nursing him, started drinking out again, and went out and actually got a DUI. So then that helped helped me quit drinking for another 4 or 5 months while I cleaned that mess up. But then it's like every single time I would stop for a period, I would get this false hope or false belief that I could start again. And this time I would do better. Like this time I'll outsmart it. It doesn't work.
No, I think that represents a lot of people out there, right? So I'm not an alcoholic if I can stop for 4 months. I'm not an alcoholic if I can go through this program. I'm not an alcoholic if I can breastfeed my child and not drink during my pregnancy. So no, I think that a lot of people, you know, go through that. So you got the DUI and you went through that situation. At that point, do you think that you realized that you were an alcoholic or that you had a problem or what?
I definitely did think I had a problem. I think I've always felt like the way I thought about alcohol isn't right. Okay. But I've also thought I was smarter than it too. Like I can outsmart this. Like, but that after the DUI, I quit for a while and I took it very seriously and, went to the treatments, went to the AA, but I got off on the DUI fairly easy because I took it so seriously. Like I had my neighbor who was a cop, like write me a letter of recommendation, and I like worked really, really hard to get it reduced. But in a way that was good, yes. But then it also like co-signed my bull crap. I don't know how to say this. Co-signed my BS and was like, oh, see, I can outsmart this. And it kind of, so after I kind of cleaned that up, I started again. And then it kind of got bad because I started to feel more trapped in it and more like I couldn't outsmart it and more depressed about it. And then I had a 2016, I had a high school reunion and got just embarrassed myself so bad. I had to get taken out of there. Like, I don't even know when I blacked out, but the next day I drank again. And it's like, okay, I'm not even taking a break anymore. Like, it wasn't like I was learning from like, or feeling that guilt and quitting for a little bit and then going back. I was just like, just kept going. And then I got pregnant though again, pregnancy always saves me. And so I got pregnant again with the twins. And that I was sober, but I didn't even make it through breastfeeding with the twins. I was probably drinking after 2 or 3 weeks after having them. And that summer, first summer with them was just, it was first year. Cause I got sober just shortly after your 1 year birthday. But the first year I was depressed. I was overwhelmed with all the kids. I felt trapped in my life and my relationship with my ex-husband. And that was a tough year. And I'm so thankful nothing bad happened to my kids because I was not a good mom.
And so tell me a little bit about your relationship with your you said ex-husband. Are you divorced currently or going through the divorce?
We are going through the divorce process. So throughout all of this history of me quitting and starting again, I would try to pull him along with me. And it's like when you're drowning and you're trying to save somebody else too, it's just like it kind of kept pulling me back down. And I love him and I respect him and he's an amazing dad. And I don't necessarily want to say anything negative about him because the way he drinks is different than the way I drink. I definitely go like binge. He doesn't, but we both were heavy drinkers. And for our whole relationship history being so surrounded and surrounded around alcohol, I couldn't get sober and him not. And I really wanted him to come with me and I don't think he wanted that lifestyle. And I knew that if I got sober, our relationship would change. And I think that the fear of that always really pulled me back in too. It wasn't necessarily that he was a bad person or whatever. I knew that if I quit and he didn't, it was gonna be an issue for us. But when I got to a point where I wasn't being a good mom, a good coworker, a good employee, and just felt so, so depressed, I had to step away and just take care of myself, and I had to make that decision.
Okay. So tell me about, can you remember the moment you had to make that decision? Like, was there a day, was there an event where you just said, you know, today's the day, I'm just done. I need to make this life change in order to move towards recovery.
Yes. Well, there was always several moments. It's like they all built up. The moment the day I actually quit, we were at work and we decided to go to lunch with the coworkers, and we had a couple margaritas at lunch, which we very rarely did, but we did do that day. And I was in my coworkers didn't even know how depressed I was, because I would leave here and or leave work. I was fine all day. Like, I would put on this big happy face and like joking gentry, and but they didn't realize how bad it was once they got home. And once I started drinking that day, I didn't want to stop. And that kind of like urge and like that addiction took over, and it was like I have to keep this party going. Like, I had so much anxiety, like, and so much stress, and I left. I told them I was going to the Scale House, which is another part of the company. And my I don't know if the owners of the company know this, so hopefully don't get in trouble.
We love this, I promise.
But I left, and everybody was really freaked out. Well, I was in such a dark place that day that I went and got more alcohol and went home. And I remember that moment pulling into my house and thinking, if I just go in the garage and shut it, my kids would be so much better off not having a mom that's drunk like this. And I didn't do it. I wasn't like whatever, but the fact that I was thinking my kids would be better off without me, and like, and had a thought of how I would have them without me, scared the crap out of me. And then, and then on top of that, I've always had this depression and whatever at home. And so now I kind of exposed myself at work, and I really love my job and I love the people I work with. And I had came back to work and had to sit down with my bosses and cried. I mean, like, typical girl thing. I cried and apologized. I apologized to everyone. But then I was kind of outed at work that, like, they didn't know the whole story. They didn't know what I did. They just thought I had anxiety and left. But it was like, I'm going to lose my job. And I didn't want to do that. And so I started texting my dad every day, day one, day two, day three.
Okay. So you've mentioned several times just about like how you felt on the inside, you know, anxiety and depression, and that, you know, for you, alcoholism drinking is a thinking problem.
Right.
And so you just woke up that next day and it was like day one, I'm sober. Tell me about that. What other resources did you have available to you to work on your recovery?
So I started going to AA right away. So I would go on my lunch break, and that was another. So I had my dad daily check in, because I sent him a screenshot of my sober date on my app every single day. And I started going to AA every day, and then I like to work out on my lunch too. So I kind of got out of going to AA every day and would work out at lunch too. And fitness has been huge for me, because that's kind of like my checkout now. Because alcohol used to be a way for me to check out. I would be able to like kind of stop thinking, where fitness kind of helps me with that too. When my mind is racing and I'm starting to feel anxious, if I go for a run or if I work out, it seems to kind of like recenter myself. Another thing that I've found to be like incredible is the amount of support that you get on social media. And kind of outing myself on social media has opened up so many new relationships, through Instagram. I mean, like, I posted 18 months sober yesterday, and I had like 2,000 people or 20, or I don't know how many people, but it's like 1,500, I think, likes on it, and people I don't even know, and then 20,000 people saw it. So it's just like, there's so much support out there and so many other people going through the same thing that it's really helps you not feel so alone.
Yeah, and I was thinking about what you said about the way that you felt that day that you drove into the garage. Mm-hmm. And sounds like you had a lot of shame, whether it was in your personal life or at work. But then it's ironic, right, that now you're sharing your story on social media, and that seems to, that's helping your recovery. So tell me a little bit about how you see the difference in that. Does that make sense? Or how you see that there's so much shame associated with alcoholism or substance abuse, but now you're posting your story. What is that?
I'm like, hey, I'm an alcoholic.
It's what?
And now I'm like, hey, I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
I think it's important for people to know too, that it's like, it's, there's a lot of people that, and that's why when I started sharing and you're hearing these other stories and you're seeing these messages, it's like, just because you're an alcoholic doesn't mean you're crazy. And I think that I didn't ever want to admit that I was alcoholic because I wanted to be this like perfect little person, and to admit that I was an alcoholic would make me not perfect. And I want people to know that you can still live a happy life. You could still be a fun person. You could still have fun. You can still be normal and be an alcoholic. Like it's kind of a funny story, but so I have like people that will get really nervous when there's like alcohol in the room and I'm in the room, like I'm gonna like freak out and start like chugging all the alcohol and run off and go crazy. And it's like, no, like we're not crazy people. Like once we're sober, we're normal people that just have a thinking problem. So that's, I kind of ranted there for a sec.
So, and that's something else that you shared your story, and then now you're saying like, there's people that are super supportive, and then you have people that might be supportive, but when you're in the room with alcohol, they might be what do you think? Like unsure if they should drink
I think they're uncomfortable. So I think it's important to share a story for other alcoholics so they can relate. And I think it's important for people that are non-drinkers so they can understand where we're coming from too, that we're not going to steal your purse and drink all your alcohol.
No, I think that's a great point. So you talked a lot about your dad and your stepmom and sending them your daily pictures, you know, day one, day two. Tell me about your family and your family history a little bit.
I don't have any really intense alcoholics in my and like my siblings or my parents, but like my extended family, I had a grandpa, I had a great uncle. I have some second cousins. I guess I have one cousin. He's in recovery, but we all kind of have, well, on my dad's side, especially. So he's not alcoholic, but he's really obsessive in his behaviors and stuff. And he gets really into fitness or whatever. And I guess that's kind of what I'm doing now with my life with Gentry stuff. I post a lot of fitness stuff, but, I was aware that there was alcohol issues in my family, but it was never in front of me.
Okay. And you said that your dad's kind of obsessive. And so do you think that that's in any way tied back to the family history, or how are you? Some people think it's genetic. Other people think that it's like you mentioned, kind of a thinking problem. What's your take on that?
Oh, I definitely think it's genetic. And that's why I think that when I look back at my childhood, the things that I thought were like alcoholic thinking, it's like the way I wasn't drinking at 5 years old, but I thought that I didn't belong, that I didn't fit in. And I think that like your alcoholism or like the way you, that disease wants to isolate you. It's kind of like an abusive relationship in a way. It's like, it wants to isolate you, and it wants the control over you. And so it tells you you're not good enough and that you're like, you don't fit in, but oh, come over here and let's go ahead and numb this together. I saw, with looking back now, I see that in the way I thought before I was even drinking. So I think it definitely is a genetic a genetic disease. I also think though that alcoholics have kind of a sixth sense to emotions. Like it's a little bit more intense, and it's a little bit more, we just have a lot more emotions, a lot more thinking, a lot more overthinking maybe. But I feel like if instead of numbing that the way our alcoholism wants to, and we embrace that and kind of channel that, like there's endless possibilities with that kind of thinking. It's just overwhelming. So the alcoholism is like, let's numb this because it's too much.
Yeah. And you know, that's where I really connected to your story, Gentry. My grandfather was an alcoholic. He died of alcoholism. I have a perfectionist mother, obsessive in fitness and work. And so I have the thinking, right? So while I never went to alcoholism, I battle regularly with that anxiety and with that depression. Am I good enough? Do I fit in? And a lot like you, I'm the happy person in the room, right? So a lot of the battles are internal. Mm-hmm. And so I look at what you've been through in your story as, you know, that could have absolutely been my story, you know? And so I just applaud you and your strength in this recovery process, and that you were able to make that decision to do what's best for you, and then also, you know, your children moving forward. So I just applaud you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you.
So what is your situation now? You know, you made a decision that day to, you know, leave or to move towards recovery. How long after that did you and your husband separate?
It was probably 6 months after, 5 months after that, 4 or 5 months, that we started living separately in the house. So this is me, but so in that though, and how I was saying that, like, alcoholics, we kind of look for the next fix, the next numb. Mm-hmm. I knew that that relationship wasn't going to work the way it was. But instead of feeling like the pain of that, I got into a relationship right away. And so even though I'm not drinking anymore, I still have to regulate the way I handle things, because it wasn't fair to him. It was really not very kind and whatever, but it was like, I didn't want to feel the sadness and pain of a failed marriage. And so I ended up getting in a relationship, and I'm still in the relationship, but I've also been very open and honest. Like, I need space. I need boundaries. I need to make sure that I'm going through the process of emotions through this divorce. And, yeah, sorry, another tangent.
No, it's not a rant. I mean, I think that you're showing like that awareness is a big part of your recovery, it sounds like. You know, you got into that relationship maybe faster than you wanted to, but you're able to put up those boundaries and then continue to work your recovery, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So what does it look like on a day-to-day, your recovery? Tell me about that.
So I post a lot about recovery. I try to post about recovery a couple times a week. So I'm on Life with Gentry is my Instagram. And I, so posting on social media, again, that's kind of like my check-in. I get up with my four babies, mm-hmm. and I get them all ready for school. We get them out the door. And then I try to work out most of my lunch breaks, because that fitness is kind of my recenter. Mm-hmm. I don't go to a ton of AA meetings, just, and I know I'm making excuses, because I just have a lot of kids and extra time is hard, but that's why I really like the check-in that I get with social media, because mm-hmm. I can have conversations with people throughout the day about sobriety on social media and not have to take an hour out of my day to go to a meeting.
Okay. And so how did you hear about the Most High Show?
Through Instagram. I think I just started following them on Instagram and was just like, I like the stuff that they're putting out there. It just was kind of intriguing to me.
Okay. And do you, have you used the Most High Media app as well?
I have. So I was actually listening to it all week, because I'm an accountant, so I can listen to like podcasts and stuff while I'm working. And it was intense. Like, there's some really, really interesting information in there. And I love the way that it talks about sobriety, but it also talks about mental health, and it also talks mm-hmm. about different ways people navigate sobriety, because I think that a lot of alcoholics are stubborn and like to do things their own way. So to give people a lot of different options on how to do it, and then they can kind of create their own path, is I thought it's a really good content. I really appreciated it.
Oh, great. So is there anything else you think someone just has to know about recovery? If you had to speak to someone that was in your situation, they've, you know, logged on to Instagram today and they're looking for a story and why they should move towards recovery, what would you tell them?
I would tell somebody looking for recovery that it's so much more fun to be sober than it is to be drunk. What would I tell somebody?
No, I think that's I think that's a really good point. I think that you brought up so many good, you know, important points for people. If you think about it, a lot of people think, oh, I drink to have fun or I drink to fit in, right? And so it takes off that edge. It takes off that awkwardness for some people.
Right.
And so I think that that's a huge point, that it's still fun. And so you still can go to parties, you said. You still can have a good time.
Yeah, but they're different. I mean, the fun is different. I have a lot more fun with my kids now than I used to because I'm in the moment with them, and I used to be kind of like rushing with them so I can drink, or rushing with them so I could go to the party or whatever. But it's different fun. I definitely think it's different fun. But I want people to know that like the beginning is really hard. I like the first 30, 60 days, like I would have to drive a different way home so I didn't pass by the gas station that I used to always stop at. Like, I mean, you have to take steps to protect yourself. But once you get past that fighting that craving, like, it is so much more fun. It's so much more fun.
And so you mentioned how you would take a different route. I think that's a powerful statement. Do you think that that's true for most people? Is that true for your journey?
To have to take different routes?
Or like to have to put things in place to, you know, promote recovery or to stay sober?
Oh, I think definitely the more you do that, the more success you'll have. I mean, you could say that you're going to work out every day, but if you don't make a plan and you don't set aside time, or you don't put any action into that, you're not going to do it. So if you really want to stay sober, you have to be like, where was I going to get that? How could I avoid that? Who was I drinking with? How can I avoid them? I know in one of the podcasts, they talked about changing your phone number. I mean, truly want to be sober, it does take a death of the person you were. I mean, you have to cut yourself off, but the rebirth of that is so much more fun. Well, I said, I was 18 months sober yesterday on my post.
And congratulations.
Thank you. Yay. I didn't even realize it too. And I was at lunch and I was like, oh, it's the first. I'm 18 months. But in my post, I said that I was like, it's like being an 18 month old child. Like you're totally relearning a lot of stuff. And it's like jokes that like you're learning to walk on your own without assistance because I'm not drunk now. But there, it's true in a way that like I am really still fresh in this, and I am still a kid in sobriety. But in that same way, how toddlers have excitement about the most silly things. Like the other day, my son hit his head, and I was so excited, almost like in tears, that I didn't have to worry if I could drive him to the hospital or not. Like that didn't even cross my mind until hours later. Like I was sober and it was like, okay, he might have to get stitches. I might have to take him to the hospital. It's just like you find new appreciation for so many little things that nobody else thinks twice about. And that appreciation and that like excitement for life is just, it's really fun. It's fun.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that people take for granted, right? That you actually stopped and appreciated that moment. Like if I had to get up and rush my child to the hospital, I would be driving. I wouldn't be, you know, at risk of a DUI. I'd be able to get in there safely. And that's huge. So you talked a lot about your four boys. How much are you able to share with like the 9 and 6 year old, obviously not the little ones, but about your recovery?
So my 9 year old, he saw more than he should. Mm-hmm. And saw mommy drunk and knew when I was drinking. And he, so something I think is interesting is that he told me that he didn't like when I drank because I said yes to everything. And so you're thinking like, fun mom, I say yes to everything. Why wouldn't you like that? And he's like, because you're not supposed to say yes to everything.
Wow.
This wise 9 year old boy. But he would ask for friends to come over, and he'd ask to go do this or to dump out all the random stuff, and I'm like, sure, yeah, go ahead. And he didn't like that. He wanted the boundaries. He wanted me to say no. And I just think that was really powerful that that's the way he saw it.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty, he's a wise 9 year old to even be able to see, you know, the difference between mommy when she's drinking and difference between mommy when she's not drinking. And, you know, I want to go back to one thing you said I think was powerful. You said there has to be a death of your old self. With that, what about other relationships, friends or family? Are there people that you had to, you know, let that relationship die to be in a healthy place?
Well, I definitely think that it took a toll on our marriage. I think there was other issues and stuff. And like I said, he's a good dad and a good person. I don't want to talk bad about him, but I definitely think that it affected that relationship. I mean, I know it affected that relationship. I do have a smaller circle of friends maybe right now. Cause there's just some people I just don't want to hang out with anymore. But I also think that, that used to be really hard for me. Like, I'm going to lose this friendship. I'm going to lose this. But it's like, you know what? They're okay. They're okay with being the way they are. And I'm okay with being the way I am. So we don't have to hang out together to just accept each other for where we're at.
Yeah. So, and I know you're doing, you said a lot of your meetings and things like that online. Mm-hmm. So are you tracking like what step you're at, or are you doing it in a different way?
No, I'm not really tracking. I just kind of,
tracking is probably the wrong word, but I know that, I've heard people say like step four was really something that helped them kind of dive into the thinking part of drinking, right. You know? So I just wonder, have you got to that point yet? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
When I was going to AA, I did have a sponsor, and we got through step four. Four or five.
Four. Okay.
So I have talked about resentments. I've talked about things, mm-hmm. and I think I'm doing that as I'm growing. I'm just not as formally with mm-hmm. like sitting down with a sponsor.
Yeah, like, definitely no judgment there. I mean, I love how you've shared your story, because everyone's recovery looks different, mm-hmm. and that you are using, you know, social media, which obviously for the Most High Show is a huge platform. So you're using that to continue on your journey of recovery. So I just wanted to ask about that, because I know you talked a lot about the other factors that you felt influenced your drinking. So what are your plans for today? It's Saturday with your kiddos.
So I have actually puppies too.
Oh, wow.
Because 4 kids isn't enough.
Right.
But we have puppies, so they're 7 weeks. I have lab puppies, so I'm cleaning them up. Some of them are leaving today, and then my boys have a basketball game, and so we're going to watch them play basketball, and then I work as an accountant during the day, but then I started working at night at a restaurant just to get paid to socialize.
Oh.
And so I have to work tonight too, but they're my boys are actually with their dad this weekend, so.
Okay. Well, you definitely have a busy life, puppies and babies. And I think it's amazing that you're continuing to move down this journey. And we appreciate you, you know, using the Most High app and sharing your journey with us. And as we close out, is there anything that you want to finish up with or that you want to share?
Yes. I actually was just thinking about my dad. So I did share a lot about my dad and how he helped me through this journey. But so the 6 months working towards the day that I actually got sober, he said to me several times, you have four great reasons right there to get sober. You have four great reasons right there to get sober. And instead of that really like inspiring me, which it should, I mean, I love my kids. Instead of that really inspiring me, it made me feel even more trapped and depressed and like lonely kind of in a way, because I feel like that comment made me feel like, why does it have to be for my four kids? Why am I not worth being sober, like for myself? And I think that I was always waiting for somebody to come in and swoop and save me from my addiction. And when he would say that, it was like I wasn't worth being sober, but my kids deserved a sober mom. And I want to kind of caution people against, or not maybe caution them, but just like if you're struggling and somebody's telling you, say, do it for yourself, I want to tell you, do it for you. Like, you deserve sobriety. You are worthy. You are enough. And you don't need any other reason besides you to get sober. And you are the only one that can do that.
Now that's powerful. I really think that's important message, because people, I think that can come off as a judgment too, right? You have these kids, you should be sober for them. You could be a better mom, when exactly what you said, you know, doing it for yourself. I think that gives you back the power and lets you start moving towards recovery for you. And so, no, that's a great message. I appreciate you sharing that. Well, I appreciate you talking to me today, Gentry, and I'm going to definitely follow Life with Gentry so I can see your continued recovery. And I wish you all the best with your Saturday. Enjoy the boys' games and enjoy the puppy time.
Oh, yes. And, they're at the point, though, that they're, like, pooping all over the place. Yeah. And I'm ready for them to go.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. It'll take at least a few things off your plate, right, when your puppy's gone. Well, I wish you all the best.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. You take care.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.